The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
All right, welcome back to Friends from Work. Today we start on a heavier and more serious tone. A friend of Robbie's, a friend of this podcast, and a listener of this podcast, a member of our community, has been battling cancer for a while. His name is Brandon. And we just kind of found out recently, Robbie, you can tell us more, that it has advanced to the point where doctors are kind of giving him a heads up to say goodbye to people, which has just been weighing heavily on my heart. Absolutely brutal. He's not even 30 years old yet. And it's just been kind of like a shock to Robbie and Candace. And it's just crazy, man. So I just wanted to say, it's really weird to record a podcast with that being the news right beforehand. But man, I'm praying for him, thoughts and prayers to him. And if anyone listening to this is a fellow member of the community, give him some time, give him some thoughts, give him some prayers. They could use it right now. So our thoughts and prayers go to Brandon. Fill us in more.
No, thank you. And absolutely. He just started kind of one final round of treatment that they are hoping will show some, you know, big signs of improvement pretty quickly. And I think that's kind of that's all of the eggs are in that basket. So there's something to hope for there. So I think that's where all of the thought and prayer energy can go at the moment. And then, yeah.
It's tough, man.
We were just talking the other day. I was telling Kyle, he's been listening through our X-Men 97 coverage. He's a big film score guy. So he was excited to get to the Newton Brothers episode there. So thank you for that. And thank you for anybody that's kind of got time to direct some prayers that way. But it is that is the nice thing about the Friends from Work community, is I feel like it's always kind of been that focus. You know, I feel like that's what you and I have enjoyed about it, is that it's a little bit less just us kind of yelling into the void, and it always feels a lot more like a group circular thing.
Agreed. Which is part of the reason why I wanted to bring it up. So thoughts and prayers to Brandon and his family. I realize there's no way to transition out of that, but I'm going to try to be sensitive. We're talking about She-Hulk today on a rewatch. I think rewatch number 35. As we go back through the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I was talking to somebody who hadn't seen any of the Marvel films. And we just brought up the point that, you know, I think by the time my daughter's 3.5, by the time my daughter is old enough to watch these, are we going to be, 50 projects deep? I hope someday I can take her through the whole thing once a week for a year. You know, that's about the pace we're at. But this is number 35.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I will say on that note.
36, by the way. Sorry, 36.
I have been working slowly for a while on a watch order that is trimmed down and streamlined just to be like a multiverse focused thing that I think I want to try to release ahead of Deadpool and Wolverine, because I know that there are a lot of folks, on the one hand, there are a lot of kind of casual moviegoers that have never been able to keep pace with the amount of especially shows that Marvel is putting out. Because I mean, I feel this whenever we're doing rewatches. Mm-hmm. It's just very different to set aside a night to watch Shang-Chi versus to set aside
two or three nights,
you know, several to watch a series. But there's also, I think, people within the community that have watched all of it where it's still just like, like we've talked about before, with the way that the order was kind of changed up, even from what was intended pre-COVID, just to the sheer number of projects and the different threads that are out there, I think that it can be kind of overwhelming to figure out what are all the relevant pieces that you're supposed to keep in mind heading into projects like Deadpool, or even when you're looking at Loki or beyond, with the multiverse projects we might get moving forward. So I've kind of had fun finding something that's really as tight as possible, but also telling a coherent story. And that's different, as always, than just saying what's every project where the word multiverse is used. Mm-hmm. I think it's more looking at some of the characters that wind up being key players and where are the key development moments for them. And then also, obviously, the idea of the multiverse itself and kind of how that develops. So it's been a really fun kind of back of my mind project here. And I think that's going to be hopefully a helpful thing, or just a fun thing for people that are looking for a new way to experience the MCU ahead of what is becoming an increasingly more anticipated film. Everything I'm seeing about, did you see this new thing about the box office?
Yep. 250 to 260 million opening weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a solid entry regardless of the rating. Most ever for an R-rated film. But Yeah. So I guess this is a good time to really quick then throw out a shout out here to our scheduling, because, well, by the way, real fast, let me back up. Two things. One, your watch order stuff is so good. I dare somebody to find a better person in the film community to put together a watch order than Robbie Earl. I trust your watch order more than anyone's. So I am looking forward to that. And I do think if you have people in your life that maybe don't want to do the whole thing, but are looking to prep, Robbie's your go-to guy. So that's good. Two, we've never done this before, but we are recording this on a Friday afternoon, like later afternoon. And so if you see Robbie taking some work emails, I will be talking while he is trying to work and podcast at the same time, which is a new thing for us. Very appropriate given today's content with She-Hulk.
Honestly, it's true. That's the whole thing. I did this on purpose.
We will be doing She-Hulk, and then, correct me if I'm wrong, Multiverse of Madness next week.
Yes.
And we put out X-Men Apocalypse on Friends from Work Plus last week, probably almost 2 weeks ago now. Mm-hmm. And then this Thursday, if you're listening on Monday, we are putting out our coverage of X-Men Dark Phoenix. I think we have one other stop on the Friends from Work Plus side. 2 weeks after Dark Phoenix will be New Mutants. And then we're going to mess around with some Foxverse stuff like Daredevil from Ben Affleck and or why am I blanking? Fantastic Four from 2005 or whatever. So there are a few other interesting projects on Friends from Work Plus. But once we get through She-Hulk and Multiverse of Madness, everything is coming together for the month of July, with July being Deadpool 1 on the main feed, Deadpool 2 on the main feed, hopefully a spoiler-free preview that Robbie and I have gotten to see of the new film, and just any other hype slash tidbits that we can gather along this journey, as our Friends from Work Plus journey is also meeting in the middle there with Multiverse of Madness and all of the X-Men stuff. So hopefully by July, watching Deadpool 1 and 2, I personally will be as prepared as possible, having never seen those films, which I already feel like we're right on that threshold. So just a lot of fun stuff coming up for June and July here on Friends from Work.
It's so crazy, because I remember when we were putting together the schedule for this year, and I think it was January, maybe, when we were sketching all this out and how we would do our X-Men watches and go in tandem with the Phase 4 rewatch. And it just felt so far away. Mm-hmm. And now it's just crazy. We're here. We're like a little over a month out from Deadpool and Wolverine, which feels like it's been this thing on the horizon for so long. So I'm getting jazzed.
You know what I think is almost crazier is just the fact that July will be all Deadpool. I think August will be some version of a summer break for us, a couple weeks off maybe on Friends from Work Plus and on the main feed. But then when we come back from summer break, what's crazy to me is we're kicking it back up with Agatha right away.
Yeah, true.
So that will be kind of fun.
Which I think will, Yeah, I'm curious to see how that works coming out of Deadpool. Yeah. Not to say that there will be overt connective tissue, but
so much can happen in Deadpool that could tie in. Like, we have no idea where that movie is going to leave us during the last post-credit sequence. Like, it could be a total reset. It could be bringing all these characters into the sacred timeline. It could be a shout out to Loki. I mean, there are so many things it could do. So we're getting close.
And, you know, I've realized, and I love this, we have gotten so far so little information about Deadpool. Like, not even, like, not only do we not know where it ends.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I love it. Like, we've gotten, even if we've gotten different bits of dialogue, it seems like they're all coming from the same, like, handful of set pieces. So it's like, there's so little, like, we're getting more and more of a flavor for the movie, but less actual giveaways.
Yeah.
And that's, like, my ideal world whenever it comes to promo stuff. So, yeah, you're right. Who knows?
Last Deadpool thing for me, I like to throw on YouTube during my lunch breaks and just watch a 15 to 20 minute video or two while I'm eating some lunch. And one of the things that was recommended for me was a sit-down interview with People magazine between Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds. They interviewed each other, and it's 20 minutes long.
Oh, nice.
I'm not sure if you saw it. It had a lot of views when I... Did you see it?
But it's not like Actors on Actors?
No, it's very similar. It's just them asking each other questions. But
I didn't see it.
I just got to say, sincerely, my respect for Ryan Reynolds went like skyrocketed in just that video. I always see him being goofy, which is, he's funny. I get it. But it comes across like he's sometimes trying too hard to be goofy when it's always goofy. This is 20 minutes of sincerity. I mean, he talks about how much Hugh Jackman meant to his career. He talks about his struggle with anxiety, about what he first felt like when he joined Origins, you know, whatever that was 15 years ago.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And I really like that video. You know me. I like watching the behind the scenes stuff. That got me more pumped for Deadpool and Wolverine than anything so far. Just because I'm like, okay, he's a legit dude and he cares about this. And that made me happy.
Yeah. That's the one thing. It's so funny because Deadpool, the property, is so... It's defined by how ridiculous the whole thing is.
Correct.
And it's all tongue-in-cheek. But it's funny that with that project, I think Reynolds, from everything that I had read even prior to this movie being greenlit, like, he is so careful. And like I think... kind of like borderline OCD about what those movies turn into, like what goes into it. Like he's involved on like a writing level, and it seems like even he's not directing them, but it feels like he has such creative input that he almost like does a musical chairs thing on the directing side. And that to me is really, it's like what you and I always say, like anytime you see somebody take ownership of the thing that they're involved in, especially in this genre where people so often kind of characterize it as like just a paycheck, that always makes me so excited. And that was one of the reasons why I always thought this movie was going to be something special, even if it wasn't everybody's scene, just because I knew that Ryan would not want to throw away the opportunity that this presents. And so, yeah, I'm with you.
Go watch that video on YouTube, please, when you get some free time. Okay, She-Hulk Rewatch 36. We'll be right back talking She-Hulk after a quick word from these sponsors.
And if you are watching this via video on Spotify or YouTube or wherever else we may offer this via video, you will see that I am rocking a Nerd Riot She-Hulk shirt, which is the, do you have one of these too, Kyle?
I do.
The Superhuman Law Division shirts.
Love that one.
This is a great, again, it's one that I feel like kind of flies under the radar unless you're looking for it. And it's nice because it fits with my other job.
Yeah.
So if you want things like this, and like we've been saying lately, they have been coming out with so many fun designs ahead of Deadpool. If you liked X-Men 97, so many great things out of there, whether you're wanting something you can wear or a coffee mug or whatever. So nerdriot.shop, use code friends from work to let them know we sent you and to get an extra discount, and you'll be happy you did.
All right, so I am really interested to hear your takeaways from rewatching She-Hulk. It was a fun experience for me. What's really cool about watching it after Ms. Marvel, if you listened to last week's episode, which you really should, and you should rewatch Ms. Marvel, we had some fiery takes last week. Ms. Marvel for me was, and if you're watching on video, it was here, like the highest of high, and then it plummeted to the lowest of low and came back to a pretty high point at the end. But it is a roller coaster. I mean, it's the Millennium Force of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. shout out Cedar Point. She-Hulk for me would be, I think, almost the exact opposite. Whereas like Ms. Marvel has some highs that give me chills. It has some 9 out of 10 moments, and then it has some 2 out of 10 moments. She-Hulk for me was like a steady 7 out of 10 when I rewatched it. Like, it's an easy breeze through watch. It never really dips like Ms. Marvel does. It knows what it is. Like, it's sure of itself. Mm-hmm. It has all of the meta commentary. It just works. I don't think I ever get the highest of highs like I get in some other shows. I don't have a ton of chill moments or like moments I'm texting my family going, you need to watch this part from She-Hulk. But I never have a part that if someone watched in, I would be embarrassed to show them. I'd be like, yeah, this is a fun law comedy show. So for me, it was a pretty steady Eddie. It was more the blue streak, just a 7 out of 10. Shout out Cedar Point. What did you think?
Yeah, I had a great time rewatching. I think this is my second time watching it after. Like, I think I rewatched it once not long after it first aired, and this is the first time revisiting. With all the series, I just wind up revisiting them much less often because, again, it's a lot easier to just throw on a movie than to commit to a whole season of a show.
For sure.
This show is so weird because I feel like it became kind of a lightning rod, and I'm not going to get into all of that, but I'm never really sure what the average person thinks about it. Like, I know what like the internet dialogue was on both sides. I don't really know what the MCU fan that actually sat down and watched it came away thinking.
Like, even in our community.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's ask
the community. Let's take pulse check. Where are we at with She-Hulk?
I am curious. The Discord is a great place to let us know, although you can also find our email address on the website. I remember at the time when we were watching it, some of our listeners that are diehards that I know to be people that are operating in good faith, their issues with the show had nothing to do with the like internet debate of it all. And it was all just the comedy didn't work for them. The pacing didn't work as well. Like, and I feel like those people were not really upset about the show. They were kind of just like, you know, not really my cup of tea, which is what we're always saying is a very fair response to these things.
I can picture a few listeners right now specifically.
Yeah. And I think that is totally fair. You know, for whatever reason, this just very much is my cup of tea. I am with you in that it probably doesn't reach the high highs of like the Ms. Marvel first episode. But in some ways, it kind of does for me in that I feel like it's a show that is more aimed at my demographic in that it's like even down to, I think that there's a line in episode, I guess the finale, where they do the kind of Incredible Hulk OG series throwback, which is still great.
Yes.
Where they refer to Jen as a millennial lawyer. And so, I mean, there's a part of me there that's like, well, I am literally in the demographic, I guess. But I also just like, I don't know. You know, I love Zeb Wells as a writer. I think is really funny. He was really involved on this. He's writing on Deadpool and Wolverine as well.
He's in the finale.
Crossover there. Yeah, he's in the finale. we got to talk with him and Cody Ziegler, who's also in the finale, and Jessica
who's in the finale,
also in the finale. And just in general, like, I think it's funny. I think it's always very sure of itself, which is not something that you can always say about these Disney Plus series.
Miss Marvel was not sure of itself for a while there.
Right. And I think you can then look at it as a whole and say, you know, if there are some episodes that feel like they're waffling and others that feel certain, it's like, well, there's still not one clear intention for this thing as a whole. Whereas this show, like, I know that they even changed some things behind the scenes last minute. And I don't know. I just think it's so well done. I think it's so different that you almost have to look at it through a lens that, like, I think is pretty unique. Like, I don't even think Deadpool, even though they're both doing the fourth wall thing, will fall into that same category. Because
why is that?
Deadpool, I think, one, just the fact that we're talking about a movie and a show, and just where Marvel is now, I think that they are going to want to have fun with the fourth wall breaking with Deadpool and Wolverine, but not at the expense of kind of moving the ball forward plot wise and everything being very much like things having consequence, I guess.
That's exactly what I was going to say. She-Hulk was so fun. I don't mean this in a bad way. It's not a but. And it's kind of inconsequential to the MCU. Whereas Deadpool is going to still be very consequential, I think.
I think if it's not, and not even that it has to be consequential for the MCU necessarily. I mean, I think it will be. But it's like, you know, No Way Home, I think you could look at and say there aren't, I mean, there are consequences in that we see the multiverse kind of breaking in and having impacts, but I think most of the consequences are more just for Peter personally. And so even if it's one, I think this will have much bigger implications than that just because of where they are and what this movie needs to be. But I think the difference too with Deadpool and Wolverine is they needed to operate primarily as a blockbuster. Like, not as a meta piece where, like, they need, if you have to be looking at everything through like an irony filter to enjoy it, then I don't think the Deadpool and Wolverine's going to work on the level that they needed to. And they know that, like, they need to do just enough of that to kind of wink at the camera, but also make it feel like, you know, we're seeing an X-Men movie. We're seeing a big, like, kind of Avengers level Marvel event. Whereas here, I think that's the show's strength is that it can do that, even to the point where the character, and maybe this is part of the break for me. I'm not even sure that we're supposed to view this as like strictly canon.
Right. Like, if it is strictly canon, how would you logistically explain the finale, for example?
Right. I mean, it's in like the MCU timeline book that I've referenced, you know, like the events. It clearly happens within the MCU, but, you know, it's like Abomination, even though they're showing clips from Shang-Chi and he's picking up right after that. In Shang-Chi, he's like grunting and he does not have a face that in any way resembles Emile's face. Like, he looks more like Abomination. And then now here we have a version of him where even if he's fully powered up as Abomination, his voice is basically the exact same. And, you know, it's like it looks more cartoony. It just feels
for sure.
I think that this is a show where, like, I like where it falls in our rewatch. Mm-hmm. I also think you could probably pull this out of any rewatch order and almost treat it like What If?
Right. Even Miss Marvel, you'd have a hard time pulling out now because of the Marvels and where she's going with that character, Kate Bishop, et cetera.
Right.
And I think they'll bring She-Hulk back. But at this point, yeah, for sure. But that's what's so strange about it. To your original point, I don't even know if that's necessarily a negative thing.
Yeah.
That's what I said to my wife. Like, we shut it off and I was like, it feels very inconsequential, not in that it doesn't bring up MCU things. It does. It brings up all kinds of MCU Easter eggs.
Mm-hmm.
But in that the whole point of the show is that the stakes are personal to Jen, and that's what we're watching. We're just watching one lawyer's story. She doesn't want to be an Avenger. She can operate her law office in LA for as long as she wants, and stuff could still be happening, like in the multiverse and the Secret War stuff, and it would have nothing to do with it. And so it's inconsequential in that way, for sure. But that doesn't mean it's bad. It's actually really well done for what it's doing. So back to your original premise, I do think that that's what makes it so confusing for the community to know where someone lands on it. You're right. Even amongst MCU fans, I couldn't tell you. Like, I don't know right now off the top of my head what Pete thinks about She-Hulk. I can't remember.
Right.
But you know what he thinks about Spider-Man, and you know what he thinks about Venom. But I can't remember what he thinks about She-Hulk. I don't think he has a huge adverse reaction to it. It just kind of fit in its own little box. So I think once you're willing to accept that and just go, I'm going to watch a legal comedy within the MCU, but not too, but not put too much pressure on what it means for Bruce or Abomination or Wong, or like, don't put too much stock into that and just kind of have fun watching it. Then I have a lot of fun. So I can start either place with actual specifics.
Maybe we start with the things that didn't, that maybe didn't work, if you have some, and then flip to ending on the things that we love, because I think we did the inverse for Ms. Marvel, and so we can change it up that way.
Okay. Well, it's not very many. Like I said, it's hard to put into words. I don't leave with the same weight. That's a thing. Like, it's not going to ever be as much my favorite thing, because do you agree that this feels like one of the most straight out of a comic type shows we have? In that it is a side story that you can just,
Well, and I'm so glad that you said that, because that's what I was going to say. Not just straight out of a comic because it's self-contained, but even to the point where it is playing with things that we know about because we are familiar with the MCU without really trying to mess with the MCU. And that's where I feel like it becomes a feature and not a bug.
Yeah.
Because there's a world where, and maybe this is how people felt that didn't like it, you know, like they hate seeing the Hulk do yoga or whatever. But like, I think the beauty of it is there are things there that if you want to watch this, I actually felt like for me this time around watching the scene where Bruce is explaining how the bar got built and the time with Tony and the line, it was a good time during a hard time. Like that kind of hit me, you know, because it's just, like that was a, like that's a real moment. And there are a lot of like real emotional moments in this show that I don't want to undercut. But I mean, just like the MCU of it, like if you want it to be, it can do some additive stuff. But I don't think it ever has to, like it doesn't subtract just because we have like a funny court case with this light elf that can change into other people. Or Mr. Immortal, like we don't now need to figure out like, but where did Mr. Immortal come from? Is he a mutant? Is he an inhuman? Where does like, how does that power set come in? And I think even when I was watching this initially, I was kind of thinking that way because the MCU for so long trained us to think like, if there is a superpowered person somewhere in this world, we know where they came from. Like that was the whole way it kind of unspooled. But there are comics that you can read, and I'm thinking specifically of like the Howard the Duck comics, that will very much like acknowledge the even like current Marvel Comics continuity and operate within that and play with that without trying to operate as though it's on the same level as the Jonathan Hickman comic. And they can both be equally good comics, right? Like that doesn't mean that Hickman is way better than Chip Zdarsky at writing a comic.
But you may have a preference. And that's...
Right. Oh, for sure.
Like, no matter how good She-Hulk is, if it was the greatest visual, plot, everything, it's probably not going to fall higher in my preference rankings than Civil War. Just, it can't because of the inconsequential nature. That's what I mean. So that's not a negative, but that is where I leave feeling like it's not as high in my rankings. But once you accept what it is doing, it does amazing things. You know, the only other off-putting thing is kind of what you alluded to a couple, like it's comedy, right? So there are some quirky things, the light elf, the like man bull. I mean, it's a little bit kind of quirky. And so if that is your humor, great. If it's not, it can come across as a little bit, not childish, but you know, like a little bit kind of goofy humor at times.
For sure.
And I think along with that, the big lightning rod thing was the visual aspect of it all. And I was rewatching thinking, man, I don't know if it's a budget thing or if it's different teams doing different things. I feel like there are times in this show where both She-Hulk and Hulk look as good as they've ever looked. Like some specific up close shots of her face, where it just looks really tangible. And then there are some times where it does look kind of goofy CGI. Like they kind of blur her out. I don't know if that makes sense, where she doesn't look like super sharp. And I don't know if that's to like save from the blemishes of the CGI or what, but there are shots where it's like, this doesn't look very good. And then there are shots that it looks amazing. And I don't know necessarily the discrepancy there, but I do think that that's a real thing too. Like depending on what someone walked in on, if my brother walked in the room, there would be a few times where I'd be like, yeah, that looks a little weird. But there are some times where it's like, holy cow, it looks amazing. Specifically some of that early stuff with Bruce and her talking, where like they zoom in on their faces. I'm like, and I, you know, I think we brought this up in the original episode. I do think Bruce is easier to make look amazing because of the nature of his face. They put more of the imperfections in his face. So there's an actual texture, but with She-Hulk, like they're trying to say that she's like California attractive. So they're trying to make her skin so smooth. And then sometimes that almost looks fake.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
No, no, for sure. I mean, and it's like, it's weird because there's no, like, it's hard to do that in any other way. Like, I'm not really sure what the solution is there.
Agreed.
Other than,
because prosthetics like, would be stupid. It'd be so stupid.
Especially for, the way, I mean, because it would look so different. Like, and I know we talked about that early on.
And she's probably 5'6" in real life. So it's like.
Right. Like, to add the height and then also just to make it visually consistent with the Hulk.
You can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, we've never had, we've never tried to do prosthetics like that in the MCU, and I don't think anybody asked for it in the Hulk context until now. And so I need to walk back. Like, I think at one point I was really,
I was
ringing the
that.
Bell, you know.
Agreed.
But again, it's like, yeah, I understand now why they can't. And I think I'm with you in that I see enough of it working to where I'm not like, why on earth did you ever think you could do this?
Yep.
You know, maybe if they had a, if there was more of a budget or more time, you know, to make every scene as good as the scenes where it looks really great, like that would be preferable.
Maybe. Yeah.
But yeah, I think I did notice though, it's weird. Like the Bruce stuff does look really good for the most part.
Yeah. His face, right?
Yeah. More so for sure than Abomination in this to me when it comes to the face. Like, I feel like the Abomination face and Scar, I guess, like Scar's son.
Scar looks weird. That's a weird thing that we left out there. That'd be another con, I think, for me, the Scar-ness of it.
I agree. I think that, especially because we got that kind of like...
It seemed way too casual, if that's a real thing.
Yeah, and it's like in the Kevin sequence,
right?
Which I still think is really, really great. He gives the little like, oh, but no, because we're going to introduce, and she's like, yeah, no, save it for the movie. And that seems like it would have been a great place to leave it, because then it's like, you know, we can all kind of like,
is there any part speculate. Of you? Is there any part of you as an MCU fan that thinks it's a little bit weird when you reference Age of Ultron and like the huge driver of that movie being Nat and Bruce not being able to get together and him saying, look at me, I can't have kids. You know, like, I feel like it kind of undercuts that to just casually be like, oh, I had a kid in Sakaar. Here he is.
Although that's Hulk and not Bruce, you know, like at that point.
Well, I guess this is still smart Hulk though. I mean, he combined the two. I know, but.
But no, I mean, I think that's the only reason, like at the time though, sure. You know, it was like very much a different person.
I don't know. It's just not my favorite part of the show that he shows up and goes, hey, here's this kid.
Oh, no. Look, I still think that it was just in general, like, I just don't really want to explore that.
Yeah.
At all. I'm totally fine with doing World War Hulk. And I think that would make a lot of sense. And I would love to just see Mark Ruffalo finally get his own movie. But I don't think that you need his son to do that. And that's the other reason why I kind of wish that they had just not gone that extra step. Because like the Kevin line could have meant so many things, and they could, that would have left them room to go whichever route they wanted to without having to deal with like taking any firm stance. And here I'm like, I would like for that to not have happened if we are looking at this impact on the MCU as a whole.
Don't let this start a tangent, because we've talked about this ad nauseum in the past. But I think after rewatching She-Hulk, I am finally to the point where I think the next logical step or cool step for Bruce would actually be a freaked out, crazy, Incredible Hulk again. That somehow there is a side effect to his smart Hulk. I think that's the only way to go. That, or you just kind of always keep him to the side where he's operating the Avengers as smart Hulk and that's who he is. But I think if you were to give him a movie, I think I'm about ready to see, sounds crazy, about ready to see Hulk smash again. Like legit smash.
Yeah.
Kind of like uncorked from the first Avengers.
No, I mean.
And not a Bruce who's ashamed of it or like he lost control of it or something. Yeah. Anyways.
No, I think that's totally fair though, because we really haven't had that in almost 10 years of MCU stuff. Like even Ragnarok, Hulk is pretty muted compared to.
Oh yeah. Good point. That's the closest thing though. I forgot about that. Yeah. Like
but it's like he almost operates more just like a standard superhero and less like a like in Avengers and Age of Ultron, you're kind of still afraid of the Hulk.
Right. They're trying to like unleash him as the plan in a bad way. Yeah. Yep. Good point.
So I think that's fair.
Okay. That for me is about it though. A few visual things. I'm not sure it's like 100, like I said, 7 out of 10 the whole time. I'm not sure it's 100% my scene as far as like the highest of highs. And I think that's due to the inconsequential nature of it. And then a few things are a little bit goofy, like man bowl, et cetera, to me that don't work as well. Those are my negatives for me. However, overwhelmingly for me, it's a positive. And again, just like with Ms. Marvel, I kind of come back to Marvel is so clutch in deciding their castings and their side characters, man. Like that's where they just run circles around people. We need to praise the casting director on this stuff. I mean, same for Ms. Marvel, but her friends, the guy at Holloway at GLKNH is funny. Like Wong shows a new sign. You know how I love, but it's not where you think, girl. Like Wong Earth, I think is so funny. Like even just how she walks, like in her entrance, is so funny when she gets up on stage and like the dialogue for her, amazing. But Nikki is a huge star of this show. Nikki is unbelievable. Ginger Gonzaga, I think her name is.
Yeah, yeah. And Pug is so funny
Pug
to me.
Pug is funny. Like I said, Holloway is underrated funny. Like, I love when she's like explaining, pouring her heart out about why she can't do this case. And he goes like, okay, none of that matters to me at all. Or like, none of this concerns me. Okay. Like that kind of stuff is funny to me. And then let's not forget Matthew freaking Murdoch shows up with an incredible entrance, and he's great in his role and is kind of charming. And that's kind of fun to see because we've only seen the brooding Matthew, and yet he's supposed to have this kind of charming side where women fall in love with him. And I love that. I love the fourth wall breaks in regards to Matthew when She-Hulk's like, this is working, right? Like we're all feeling this. It's not just me. And then, you know how funny I think the drip broker is. And dude, he makes me laugh so much. Is this the hag convention? Like that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah. Luke Jacobson.
Yeah. Luke Jacobson. Can you still make my suit? No, Jennifer, because I hate you now. And that's all he says and walks away. Like that stuff is amazing. My work is impeccable.
Man, I think it's, to me, it's really funny, even if like I don't know that it's laugh out loud funny consistently.
Good point.
But not in a, like it's weird. It kind of makes me, it feels in a nice way, like I'm watching, like, Friends or something.
Yeah, it lives in a good space. I agree.
Yeah,
it's just not the like, other guys. Like I'm crying. I'm laughing so hard.
Right,
But there are little like, jokes where I kind of chuckle and smile and it makes me feel good. Yeah.
It's clever. And like, there's like the, a lot of the moments we covered when we were first going through the show, but like the, you know, I'm literally a different person now line from Bruce. And then her looking at the camera and saying, ha ha. Like, I think that the, like in general, the fourth wall breaks are, there's so much room for those to get annoying and they never do for me. They're always,
there's not too many of them.
Like, and it's like, they're well done. Like Tatiana is so good. Like she is always, always dialed in.
Yep.
And like, I just noticed it even more with those things, the way she's like flipping back and forth between like being fully engaged in a scene, like even like the scene after Matt, when he's doing like the walk of shame and Nikki walks in and is like, oh my gosh, what are you doing? Like, we're getting ready for the gala. And she's like cutting between interacting with Nikki and telling her about the night with Matt, but then also talking to the camera and like, wait, shouldn't this episode be over? But it doesn't feel like stilted to me. Like all of that stuff is, and I think that's totally on her for carrying that as kind of effortlessly as she does.
Especially when you consider it's her first entry. Think about how often we've talked about that's the so first entries not being super solid.
Yeah.
Yeah. She never pulls me out of it for sure.
And you're right. That's where I get to, you know, if you look at this as, like a legal comedy, that's just, that happens to take place within the MCU, then like, that's when it becomes fun and you don't have to deal with some of the like, you know, what are the implications of X questions like we were talking about at the beginning? Because just if you don't have to ask where all of these characters exactly are on the timeline and like what they know and like what's going on with Daredevil and exactly how does this integrate him now within like the wider MCU, but instead just like, yeah, we've got She-Hulk, who's a lawyer, and of course she's going to have like a night out with Daredevil. And it's incredible and really fun. And maybe they never pick up that thread again in any other Daredevil appearance.
And that would be okay.
Yeah, that would be totally fine because it works for me. It feels characteristic of Matt Murdock still. It brings out a side of him that I think we probably could have gotten more of in the Netflix series.
And I love that you hear that.
I know, right?
For 1 second. It's pretty good.
If that's the... If only because it shows me that the MCU is at least willing to recognize the existence of that theme.
Yeah, correct. Their interactions are a huge win, I think. I love when she's like, oh, forgive me for attacking the guy wearing a devil costume and assuming you were the bad guy. And he's like, fair point. True.
The whole premise of each episode being a different legal issue affecting some like superhuman or person operating as a superhero. Like, I think now that like, that's another thing now that we don't have to think in terms of what's coming and what's the larger story, but just looking at it as kind of like a sitcom-y thing, even more so than WandaVision in some sense, because WandaVision was so like cliffhangery.
Right. Like and more consequential for sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like it is really fun. Like, it's clever. Mm-hmm. I like the way that they bring Wong back in and like the fake magician and the cease and desist. Yes. Like, it's just, they're all again, like kind of self-contained, like, but it's so,
that's an example of another side character. Even Donnie Blaze's hype guy makes me laugh.
Like, oh yes.
Like, that guy's doing like, great.
And the lawyer.
Yes.
The lawyer is a magician?
Yeah. How about, I love the Matt and Jen interaction when he's like, okay, I'm going to take out these goons. It should take about 10, 15 seconds a person. She's like, well, I'm going to sit up here for 30 minutes while you're just taking people out. He's like, that is not at all what the math would be. And then she doubles down on it later. Yeah, you're right. Donnie Blaze. I think Emil is actually really funny. So again, get over the abomination not being the abomination exactly as you think. I think it's a huge win. He kills it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I think that raises an interesting question with the MCU in general. And I'm curious to see how that works itself out moving forward. I remember when, even even prior to Love and Thunder, I think even Ragnarok caught some of this from a few folks, but Love and Thunder certainly did. There were a lot of people going back to like, oh man, like the worst parts of Thor the Dark World were, there it is, were better than this.
Yes, thank you.
You know, because at least it like took itself seriously. And I do think, you know, you look back at something like The Incredible Hulk, and it took itself very seriously.
So seriously.
Which is part of why it you know, it's like when a movie isn't willing to kind of poke fun at itself, then it doesn't age super well. But it's like if there's a little bit of kind of a knowing thing going on, then you feel like you're all on the same page with the creators. But I'm just thinking,
I
like,
agree.
It's like Emil is such a fascinating example of that, where I could see a lot of people looking at that character from The Incredible Hulk and being so upset at how different he is, and like, oh, you know, he's writing haikus and he's doing therapy groups. But on the other hand, like aside from the plot element and kind of where Abomination is heading arc wise, I don't think that there's any debate that we're just getting a better performance here, that it's just like more interesting. And like, there's a lot, it's the first version of that character was absolutely like a one note thing. And here I for do sure. laugh out loud. Yes. I never really know where it's going. There are parts where it's like, is he lying? Is he trying to like pull one over on everybody? Is he actually kind of kooky now?
But also, by the way, I don't think I caught the first time. He's going back to jail for 10 years.
Except
then Wong takes him out.
Yeah. Which I had totally forgotten.
Yeah, correct.
That was the post-credits scene here.
No, but I'm with you. You are kind of wondering, like, behind the whole therapy thing, is he still doing bad stuff with Abomination? But then it kind of turns out that he's not, and it actually helps lead to an incredible moment, I think, in the circle up with Jen.
That's the other thing that makes this show so different is, like, again, to look at Emil. There, everything is pretty nuanced, and I think that that's why if you are wanting to have a take, it's really easy to just screenshot like, you know, a meal in the like yurt area or like Bruce doing yoga or whatever and be like, oh my gosh, what am I watching? But I actually think it's like there's so much like clever writing in it, but there's also like from the very first episode with Bruce, I don't think you're ever supposed to come away from the show liking Bruce less or like viewing him as any kind of villain. But I did notice this time, there are certain scenes where he's clearly supposed to be like kind of talking down to Jen, and it's like a little pandering. And then there's like the push and pull where it's like, he's just jealous. And so it's all like, again, I don't think it paints Bruce in a negative light. It's just kind of nice because it makes him a real person in a way. Like, as much as like this movie gets, or the show gets cartoonish in other ways, there are also elements where it feels like they're willing to like let these actors like step outside the lines a tad, or color outside the lines whenever they're like, especially in his case, coming back to a character that he's now played a lot over the last decade. So it's like I think that the show, like, for how silly it can be, is also like surprisingly deft at certain moments. Mm-hmm. And that's where I would say like one of the bigger strengths of this on this watch is just how much it kind of keeps the story focused on Jen. Like to what you said earlier, like, and
literally all the way through this. The finale with a creative ending for sure.
Right. Like it. And the end of episode 8, like where they like play that video of her on the screen.
Yeah.
Like is such a horrifying thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's they build some like, tension really, like really for a small thing. But when she smashes the wall and they're all like, don't do it. And then that's all going to get captured. That resonated with me. I was like, yeah, that got me.
And that's the perfect example of what I think we were saying Ms. Marvel could have done more of if they had not done the clandestine thing. Like we don't need the threat that a whole other dimension is going to come in and destroy ours.
Or in this case, like what they were hinting at in the finale, like we don't need the threat of her blood actually being taken and then it working on another person. He turns into a Hulk. And then the real Hulk shows up and Abomination's there fighting. Like that's the point of that finale that I thought was so creative. I still do, by the way, think is incredibly creative.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Like even just the threat of that footage being shared by some dumb idiots works for me.
And that you're right. That is the genius of it. And of the finale is like, she's almost, which is funny because this show was probably being produced roughly simultaneously with Ms. Marvel. I think it came out right after Ms. Marvel.
Pretty close.
If I'm remembering, but it like her speech there could be speaking to some of the criticisms that we had last week in talking about Ms. Marvel, not the finale specifically, but whenever she's like, no, this is a show about how I was just figuring out how to be Jen and She-Hulk and that's all getting wrecked. And like, that's enough. Like that can be what the show is about. It doesn't have to like launch up anywhere. And she even makes the comment about how Marvel's always about like high stakes plot lines. And it made me think again of like Thor: The Dark World, where it's like, it has to be something where if he doesn't stop it, like the whole universe is going to be like thrown into darkness. Like it can't, there's no like, there's no middle ground.
Right. I take it all as very funny. And I think it's very creative. I don't think she's right about every project. Obviously we've talked about that.
I
love that the MCU is putting it out. Cause that means they're willing to be in on the joke and wink at it. But obviously the thing they do better than everyone else is that stuff. So like if there was a version of Kevin in the DC world, but it was Zack Snyder, that's where you'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
The Zack.
Yeah. Well, even like the, even when she says, you know, some people say every Marvel movie ends the same way. And he's like, who's saying that?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, there's a, like, that's what I think is really special about this. And I do think we'll get more of that in Deadpool, but here it's like, there are the layers of like, okay, it's poking fun at itself, but not so much so that it's saying it doesn't, that like Marvel doesn't take its own stuff seriously.
Right.
And like, that's the really fine line.
And they're great at it.
Yeah.
This is how I like to close these rewatch episodes. We kind of talked about, where do you see Shang-Chi going at the end of the Shang-Chi episode? Like, how could he fit into the Avengers and all that? And then maybe we didn't do enough of this last week, but we talked about how I'm super stoked about Ms. Marvel being around. We obviously got that clip of her with Kate Bishop and what like a younger Avengers team could be like. She's back in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Does she ever meet up with Spider-Man? We didn't go as in depth as I would like on that, but I do want to kind of close the episodes by saying now, where do we see She-Hulk going? And I think the beauty of this show is that answer could be really, really simple for me and I would be satisfied because of the inconsequential nature. I love the idea that Jen is just working cases in LA. And if there's a big legal case that comes up where she has to travel across the country, it'd be fun to see her. Like Tatiana can pop in to some other thing and you're like, oh yeah, she's still working, or oh, she helped Matt on this case. Like, I don't think this will happen. But like if she popped in on Daredevil, it'd be cool. Or if Daredevil has to travel one time to LA for something to reference, or he phone calls Jen, right? To like ask a few questions or something. I think that's a great place to leave her. Like, I love that the character, you know, that cool scene with Matthew Murdock where he says, when the law fails, then She-Hulk can help. And I agree with that, but I don't think I ever need her. I don't think I ever need her joining the Avengers. And I love that that's where it kind of ends. Like, sorry to all people watching. I just lost my camera because the internal temperature, it's too hot in this room. It's a freaking 100 degrees here in Tennessee. So I'm going to be black screen for the rest of this episode. But
I know I should have turned my fan on, which if you're watching video, you saw happen also.
Yeah, well, I turned off the air conditioning so that there's no fan noise. But golly, it gets hot up here when I turn off the AC and it's 100 degrees outside.
Yikes.
Anyways, I think it's an easy answer in the case of She-Hulk. I think leaving her kind of in that role where she's not going to be an Avenger, but she can help as She-Hulk physically, but also all the lawyer stuff as Jen is a perfect place for us to check in with. So I love that.
Yeah. No, I think that's true. I was thinking the same thing. Like, I'm curious where Marvel sees this character going. Like, I don't, this is one where I could see her popping up in movies, and I could see that making sense budget-wise, you know, which is something they reference within the show, but I think is a real concern when you just have a fully CGI character like that.
Yeah, but she could pop in as Jen still, and it would work.
That's also true, yeah.
For a lot of
And yeah, I think that, like, that's what I enjoy is I just like her being an ingredient within the MCU. And yeah, I think she could show up in so many places and it can just be fun. I don't know that there's, you know, I guess if we did get a World War Hulk movie, it would be weird to not have her involved, like at least mentioned.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I don't know that I need her to be part of some driving central Marvel narrative.
That's what's beautiful about it. I mean, even it could be as simple as in a movie with Bruce, he makes a phone call to her and you hear her voice or something.
Right.
Would be cool.
Yeah. Or, I mean, even, you know, if there is a World War Hulk thing and Bruce does get into trouble and like go like off the grid and need somebody to help, like you could see where there could be an actual meaningful moment there. But I do, yeah, I wonder what they... I feel like making the finale what it was kind of represented a step in a certain direction where it's like, I think it's kind of hard to come back from that where they, like, I feel like they either have to kind of recognize that this show is sort of its own thing now and sort of like not excise it, but at least set it to the side.
Mm-hmm.
Or they have to kind of just like bulldoze over that and kind of like move past some of the meta stuff that comes with it. Because I think that does start to get really messy if they start trying to make She-Hulk more integral and like lean into the fact that she kind of has the ability to literally control her own story, even though he says she won't be able to come back there again and they like do that stuff. I think that, and I'm okay with that move because I think that it was so creative and different and like timely, but I do wonder if that forecloses some options like down the line.
In the future, yeah. All right, that's all I have. I need to wrap this for a lot of reasons, but mainly because it's a million degrees in here and my camera's dying. I hope that everybody out there has a great week. Check out Friends from Work Plus because we'll be releasing a Dark Phoenix episode that I am as stoked to talk about. Trust me, you are not going to want to miss this Dark Phoenix episode. You're not going to want to miss some of my takes. In fact, so much so that I already posted about it on Friends from Work Plus and on Discord saying,
wow,
you guys are not going to want to miss some of my takes. I still
need to watch it before we do our episode covering it.
No comment.
I've never seen the whole thing.
No comment. I watched it last night. We are recording it tomorrow and just get ready. Buckle up, Buster. And earlier, you know, there were a lot of little MCU news things that we haven't hit on here, but I'm just going to skip them because you should really sign up for our newsletter. That's the best place. Greg does an amazing job of rounding up rumors of Julia Louise Dreyfus talking about Thunderbolts and the box office stuff, and all that stuff comes in our newsletter once a week on Sunday, the Sunday Post, written very well by Robbie and our friend Greg. You're going to want to subscribe to that. It's free. It's on Substack. Check that out. And you're not going to want to miss our Friends from Work Plus episode this week. Thanks for watching She-Hulk with us. Next week, we're talking about Multiverse of Madness, kind of as a conclusion to our Phase 4 rewatch with the Phase 5 stuff on the horizon in the future, sometime in the future. But that's where we'll be concluding that and then getting ready for Deadpool. Subscribe to this podcast. Tell your friends about it. Thanks for checking out our sponsors and for supporting Robbie and I here on Friends from Work. We'll see you next time. Thanks.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.